Did
Interesting.
anybody notice anything happen to perception of time? Were
Not
you
yet.
aware of time?
Time doesn't exist.
Time didn't exist.
I lost it. Yeah, I lost that for I don't know how long, but I did.
Good. Johnny, you were saying?
No, I was saying my feet are always painful, so it was very liberating. It's as though they were not as inflamed and ugly and they're always present in my life because I have strong pains in my feet all the time. And so that was very, very cleansing. I
Good.
feel like a ballerina now.
Oh, good. Well, that means that you should do this exercise more frequently. That would help.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the reason I asked you to do this specific visualization is very much tied to the theme of our topic that we're starting this week, which is Zen. And in Zen, we're talking about being in the present. And in the quote from Dilge Gyatso Rinpoche, he mentions turning on the light. So for a moment, you all turned on the light. And suddenly the darkness of delusion, which is related to time and place and perception, shifted. Would we say that's an accurate description of what took place? And for the moment, what was happening was just blue light going in and out of your body through your feet and your hands. And the typical perception of what was taking place was shifted. Now, this was a very simple exercise, and there are many ways to do this. This is just one brief little exercise, but I can guarantee you that if you do this for long periods of time, every day, you'll have major shifts in the body. One doesn't need to do the blue light and the hands and feet. One can just do calming the body in and out. But I wanted to have a strong response from all of you, so I introduced this visualization as well. And so we see that when we're brought into, and it's actually very good that we have Johnny with us because he described something that probably happened to everybody at some level. But because he's so sensitive to his feet, and specifically we had the visualization on the feet, it had an effect immediately in terms of opening up the circulation, opening up the energy, and relieving discomfort. And these kind of exercises that take us into the present and allow us to be right now have exactly that effect. Because pain and discomfort, whether it be physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, is all tied to not being in the present. Now, that's a very strong statement, and I'm sure many people would argue with me on that, and we could have long discussions. But in order to experience pain and discomfort, we have to have a reference. And the reference is the past. Because without a reference to a condition of non-pain, we wouldn't know what pain is.
Owen, can you repeat that first sentence that you said? All pain.
Yes. All pain and discomfort, be it physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, has to do with time.
Time.
It has to have a time reference. Because if we don't have a time reference, it can't exist. So that means if we don't have an experience of non-pain, what we call non-pain or comfort or pleasantness, we can't understand or experience what is pain or displeasure or discomfort. And so once one masters the ability to be in the present moment sufficiently, all discomfort and pain starts to diminish. The more one masters being in the present, the more suffering, as we call it in Buddhist terminology, dukkha, but pain starts to diminish on a physical level as well. Now, that may seem like an impossibility to us right now because we don't have that experience. But what we have exactly is an example of that experience with Johnny just now. Here he has pain in his feet. He has pain in his feet regularly. And in his brief, what was that, 5 minutes, maybe 8 minutes of breathing, the pain was gone. I'm sure the pain returned, but the pain returns as we start to perceive our reality in the reference of time. Now, when I say perceive our reality in the reference of time, I'm referring to not being in the present. Meaning having basic things that don't allow us to be in the present. I want to jump off to a little side theory explanation here of time and space, but we'll save that for a moment so we don't lose this train or this inertia. So we see from Delge Gyintse Rinpoche's quote, turning on the light instantly destroys the darkness. We all understand that, right? We all know what it is to turn on light in a dark room or use a flashlight in the dark. Likewise, even a rather simple analysis of ego clinging and afflictive emotions can make them collapse. Or so a simple breathing technique like we did just now can make the darkness disappear. Okay, so far so good, right, everybody? Yes, Tatiana. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I don't get the meaning of afflictive emotions.
Means negative emotions.
Negative. Oh, okay. Yes.
Affliction. And if it's so simple as that, then why can't we do it? Why is it so difficult to do it? Why does the pain return? That's a question for somebody to answer. Throw out whatever you think.
Because we don't live in the moment.
Okay. Why can't we live in the moment?
Because we are always linked to the past or to the present. We do this movement with our heads, like with our brain. We just jump in the past and in the future continuously.
Well, why do we do that? You're correct. Yes, that's correct. But why? What makes us do that?
Clinging.
Okay, and what's another word for clinging in typical vernacular rather than clinging, which is something Buddhist that people would understand? But if I was to say it to somebody who has no idea of Buddha Dharma, what word would I use? Excuse me.
I think of ego.
Attachment.
Attachment.
Attachment, ego, that's all correct. I'm still looking for one more word.
Suffering.
Suffering is the result.
Desire or aversion.
Desire and aversion are also related to it. I'm looking for something much simpler than that. Nothing to do with just a simple answer for average person. Nothing to do with Buddhist terminology.
Delusion. Memories.
Okay, memories. Memories are part of it. That's getting closer.
Denial.
Denial is an aspect of it usually.
Delusion.
Delusion, okay.
Expectations.
All of that comes under the heading of the word I'm looking for. Okay, let me say you get up in the morning, okay, you go into the bathroom and you're going to brush your teeth. And you pick up the toothbrush with your right hand. Most people do. Why don't you pick it up with your left hand?
Habits.
Routine.
Yeah, habits. It's not easy to break habits. And although we have the ability, as you just saw in a 5-minute meditation, to create great change, it doesn't change the habit. So as soon as the exercise is over, we return to the habit of what's causing the suffering. So recently, I had a discussion with somebody, and it's not the first I've had, and I'm sure it's not the last, and I'm sure many people who listen to this when it goes up to the website, if I leave this part in, will have lots of comments. I'm not a big fan of all these mind apps, you know, all these apps, how to meditate, how to this, how to that, da, 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 da. Because all it does is take you into a brief experience like I just gave you, but it doesn't change habits. Unless you become addicted to the app, in which you've just created a new habit that's going to be even harder to let go of, because now you're going to have to pay for the app, be part of the cloud, have the iPhone and do et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which we call karma, or if you recall, the word before we did was papancha, which means proliferation of energy of karma. And so if we look at it, or we consider what we've been saying so far, we can see that perhaps being in the present is essentially dependent upon changing our habits. That's the first thing we have to learn how to do. And you can't change a habit overnight. If I told you, go to your bathroom and start brushing your teeth with your left hand, you'd find it very frustrating. But we have to start somewhere. And that's why a daily practice is so essential. And the simplest daily practice one can do is sitting and breathing. That's the simplest. There's nothing more simple. Some people say to me, oh yes, but I feel very relaxed and very relieved. My meditation is listening to music. Well, that's fair enough. I love music. What happens when there's no electricity and you don't have your own private chamber orchestra? Okay. What happens when you're a clarinetist and you listen to your own music, but you can't play because you have a cold sore? Or you're a violinist and you can't play because you've got tendonitis. So no matter what happens, doing your daily breathing practice can be done sitting, can be done lying down, can be done while you're walking. That's the difference between real vipassana, in my opinion. I'm putting the real in there, and that's a bit judgmental of me, but I'm accepting that. And what is called today mindfulness. Extracting a tool simply to make life delusion more efficient. Because if a person thinks that, well, I can study and practice mindfulness so I can be a more successful business person, all they're doing is deluding themselves into thinking they're going to be happier because they've just taken a technique that will allow them to acquire more things or more attitude towards their ego. Whereas happiness is letting go of things. Is releasing. It doesn't mean happiness is not being in business. Don't confuse the two. It means letting go of the attachment. So we have to change the habits. Now, let's go back for a moment on what I wanted to spin off a little bit. Remember, wasn't last week, I think it was before I went to Maui, we talked about the quantum gravitational field. You recall that? Whereas space is not really space. Space is a field called a quantum gravitational field, and we all exist in it. We're all empty. I was just listening to it. Actually, I just reviewed and edited on the computer earlier today, so I remember. And existing in that field, we all exist as atomic structures in one form or another, biological, non-biological, complicated, complex, less complex. And so if we are in the present, in space and in time, and we see time as an actual thing, then we've limited ourselves to what is this limited perception of relative reality, which is us. And that doesn't mean just my hands and my feet and my body, but it means everything I think about as well. The way I think about relationships, the way I think about my job, or about my life, or about my family, or about anything else. It's in that framework, that habitual framework of time. And the minute I give it time, I put it in a box. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Questions? Questions, anybody? Any confusion at all? Anything, please don't, I don't expect it to be simple. Nope?
No. But if you repeat it, I would appreciate.
Okay. So we spoke about, no, of course. I think it's very important. It's a good thing. I think a lot of people feel similarly. They're just not saying it.
I agree with you, Johnny. I was just going to ask him to repeat it as well.
My teacher, who was an amazing man, closest thing to a saint I've ever met, used to say at the end of his life, he was a very bad Buddhist, and I could never understand what he meant by that. Now I really understand, because I'm a very bad Buddhist. I know too many habits. Okay, quantum gravitational field. Quanta means in Latin packet, a number of things. And light we see because photons, which create light, are in packets, quantum. We can't break light down to the smallest particle, a photon. Photons travel in packets. They're called quanta of light. That's how we see light. That was the first evidence in science that there's this thing called quanta. Then we saw that in a atomic and subatomic reality of physics, things move in quanta or quantum. Now, what they understand through physics, and this is, I mentioned this, Carlo Rovelli, who wrote the book on quantum gravitational and on physics. Johnny, you mentioned that last time we spoke about it. He and the research he's done and some other physicists have started to find that space itself is made up of quanta, meaning there are quantums of gravity that come together that cause and create space. Space meaning space around us, not space out, the space out there too, but even this space. So between myself and the screen, which is right here where I am, there's no empty space. There's all these little quanta of like little structures all the way. And the screen itself is a quanta. And I am quanta, okay? And this is connected to what I mentioned before also, if you recall, that in every atom, there's 10 to the 49th power of empty space compared to solid material. So you have a nucleus, which is a proton and a neutron. We're not gonna go to subatomic particles. And then you have electrons spinning around. The space in an atom, the empty space, is 10 to the 49th power. It means 10 and 49 zeros more than the actual material, which means everything is empty. Interesting that they used to call that in Buddhist teaching many thousand years ago, emptiness. But because of certain forces, the basic ones, which are gravity, strong, weak nuclear force, and electromagnetic force, we have this relative reality that seems like things are solid. My hands can't go through each other because they're solid. Well, now we understand that everything is made up of these quantum packets, and that is what space is, including us. Okay? And as a result of that, if we create a concept of time that's limited by beginning, transition, end, we are not living in that space. We are limiting ourselves to the relative position that we hold in that space. Does that make more sense, Sam, Johnny?
Yeah.
Now, so we could say that the enlightenment or nirvana that people were speaking about is the ability to suddenly let go of that concept and become unlimited in quantum space, quantum gravity. And yet, at the same time, to deny that we have a relative reality would be useless because, as I used in the previous, I'm going over everything I just edited, if we drink a lot of tea, eventually we have to go and pee. So that's part of the relative reality. So we have to understand that these two poles, these two realities are interwoven and dynamically interacting with each other. Our concern is to have less suffering, right? Our concern is to have less suffering, to live a happier life, to live a healthier life, to find out who we are, to be able to exist in whatever lifespan we have in a content, fulfilled way. Well, if we understand the nature of reality and these duality, I don't want to use the word duality, but these aspects of the singular reality, the relative and the absolute, we can then find a way to navigate towards an awareness of timelessness. We can approach every day with a way of being present, at least attempt to. And this is the fundamental foundation of Zen.